Shriyam, opulence. Pranayina, relatives. Suhrida, friends. Nivasam, residence. Tyaktva, giving up. Yayao, went. Vanam, to the forest. Asun, life. Iva, like. Muktasanga, a liberated soul. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. Carrying out the order of his father, who was bound by a promise to his wife, Lord Ramachandra left behind his kingdom, opulence, friends, well-wishers, residence, and everything else, just as a liberated soul gives up his life and went to the forest with Sita. Purport. Maharaj Dasharatha had three wives. One of them, Kaikeya, served him very pleasingly, and he therefore wanted to give her a benediction. Kaikeyi, however, said that she would ask for the benediction when it was necessary. At the time of the coronation of Prince Ramachandra, Kaikeyi requested her husband to enthrone her son Bharat and send Ramachandra to the forest. Maharaj Dasharatha, being bound by his promise, ordered Ramachandra to go to the forest according to the dictation of his beloved. And the Lord, as an obedient son, accepted the order immediately. He left everything without hesitation, just as a liberated soul or great yogi gives up his life without material attraction. Om Gyanatim Randasha Gyanajana Salakaya Chakshumitamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Maha Panchakopatrivishcha Kripasindavivicha Patitano Pavanevyo Vaishnavivyo Namo Namaha. So we've begun the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. Lord Ramachandra not only is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who performs so many wonderful pastimes which enliven the devotees, but he also sets the perfect example for humanity. So we see that in the pastimes of Ramachandra, he presents himself as the perfect devotee, the perfect king, the perfect husband, and here we are seeing he is also the perfect renunciate. So he's exhibiting all of these wonderful qualities to show us, to show the living entities in this material world, how to act according to the highest level of religious principles. So we see throughout Ramachandra's life this quality of renunciation. He was very obedient to his guru, very obedient to all the sadhus. Whatever they ask of him, please come and kill this demon, he would immediately do. Any disturbance he would take care of, and he was very, very obedient to his father. And therefore we see here that he gave up everything, and he went to the forest to honor his father's vow. Now this is not such an easy thing. He was just about to be coronated as the king, the ruler of this great area with all wealth, riches, everything. Of course, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he already has these things, so he had no need for them. But we can see that he's set this example of complete detachment from all material things. Then later we saw that even when he returned, the first thing he did was he gave his entire kingdom away to the sadhus. Of course, they refused and gave it back to him, knowing that he was the perfect ruler. And then finally, to preserve religious principles, he eventually even renounces his most dear consort, Lakshmi Devi. So he set this example of detachment to all material things and how to use everything in Krishna's service. He also showed this example of duty, that the idea that one's religious duty is the most important thing, that one's honor, one's character, one's acting according to religious principles, that this is more important than life itself. So these were very powerful lessons that we learned from the life of Lord Ramachandra. So here we are learning specifically about renunciation, that we should not become overly attached to this particular body and to the extensions of this body. We should not become overly attached to our home, to our possessions, to our family, to our position, to our occupation, to our activities, all of these things which we hold very, very dearly. So the example is given in this verse and in the purport that Lord Ramachandra gave these things up just as a liberated soul gives up his body at the time of death. Well, that's an interesting example because this is an example to show how easily he gave these things up. As easily as a liberated soul gives up his body. Now, to us, that may not seem quite so easy, you know, because we are not, perhaps we are not fully liberated souls. At least I know that I am not. So therefore, we have some attachment to the body, and we might face the time of death with a little bit of fear and trepidation. But for one who is self-realized, who one fully understands his relationship with Krishna, even this is no difficulty. So we have so many examples in our scriptures of how great souls gave up their bodies very, very easily. We have the example, of course, of Bhishma Dev, the most glorious death, how he actually was able to will the time of his death. He had such spiritual power. And, of course, he willed it at such time that he could look upon, you know, the lotus feet and the face of Lord Krishna. Of course, Dhruva Maharaj, we can see when it was time for him to give up his body. The flower airplane from Vaikuntha comes down, and he simply, actually not just simply stepped up, but he stepped on the head of death, right, and then entered the chariot, showing how he had totally conquered over any fear of death. And, of course, we have even in our own experience, we have the most wonderful, most holy example of Srila Prabhupada, who never wavered from his devotional service, never wavered from his duty of his of the great mission and task that he had been entrusted by Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya up until the very, very last moment of his death. And sometimes I find most of us, you know, if I can barely watch some of those last videos because they're painful to the heart. But even when we see in practically the last day or two that Srila Prabhupada has the microphone, you know, still translating the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, up until his last breath. These are such wonderful examples we have of the Vaishnavas. And even in more currently, we see so many wonderful examples, even amongst our God brothers and God sisters, those who have left their body in very glorious circumstances. And we see so many examples where devotees became very peaceful at the time of death, even if there may have been some struggle. It seemed like in so many cases we see that at that final moment, devotees found that peace and they were able to give up all attachment to the material body and go back to Krishna. So this actually, although it seems like a difficult example to see, you know, is this being easy, how a liberated soul gives up one's body at the time of death, we actually see that this is quite possible for the devotee. And so in the same way that one gives up one's body at the time of death, being completely surrendered to the lotus feet of Krishna and Guru, in that way one should also give up material things within this world. Now we know, of course, that that's difficult to do all at once. Sometimes it's we have many, many attachments from so many lifetimes and even from this lifetime. So we understand that it will be a gradual process, that detachment may not come immediately, but yet it still should be coming step by step. It is not that we should be holding on to attachments or increasing those attachments or seeing, you know, how we can expand that level of attachment. Actually, quite the opposite. The devotee is always seeing how he can become more detached from the material and more attached to the spiritual. Of course, these processes go together. So we don't want to plan, we don't want to set up a goal or our mission in life of how we can become more materially attached, how we can become more engrossed in sense gratification, increase our material things. Rather, we accept those things which are favorable in Krishna consciousness, but we plan to decrease. Even if it's little by little, we want to become more free from material attachments, because ultimately the time of death, we have to give it all up. Everything has to be given up at the time of death. We've heard this since probably day one, first time we ever heard the philosophy became devotees, but yet it's hard to fully understand and realize that yes, the day will come, and yes, I do have to give everything up. So Srila Prabhupada encouraged us to start the process early. Don't wait for that moment and then having it yanked out from under us, but begin now that process of detachment. So what is that process of detachment? In Krishna consciousness, there is a very specific way that we philosophically understand this process of renunciation or process of detachment. And the most important thing that the bhakta or the devotee understands is that detachment is not separate from the process of bhakti. It is not that we simply become detached in a vacuum. This is the impersonal conception. One simply negates everything. You know, because we experience distress in this material world, therefore we try to get rid of everything. This is the impersonal or the jnani approach. Understanding, I am not this, I am not that, I am totally severed from everything material. That's not the process that the devotee takes. Rather, the devotee takes the process of not being, of engaging everything in Krishna's service. So we have so many very nice verses, nice examples of this in the Srimad Bhagavatam 127, very famous verse. We hear Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janyatya Shuvairagyam Gyanachayad Haitukam. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. So here, the causal order is very important that we understand. It is not that one gains knowledge and one becomes renounced and then one gets bhakti. That's more or less the jnani approach. Actually, the bhakti approach is the other way around. It's by rendering devotional service through the process of bhakti, then one acquires knowledge and detachment. In other words, they come as byproducts, as sometimes said, for the process of bhakti. And Srila Prabhupada, I want to read this purport. Srila Prabhupada explains it very nicely. This is such an important principle. The principle of knowledge and detachment are two important factors on the path of transcendental realization. The whole spiritual process leads to perfect knowledge of everything material and spiritual, and the results of such perfect knowledge are that one becomes detached from material affection and becomes attached to spiritual activities. Becoming detached from material things does not mean becoming inert altogether, as men with a poor fund of knowledge think. Naishkarma does not mean undertaking activities that will produce good or bad effects. Negation does not mean negation of the positive. This is one of Srila Prabhupada's famous lines. Negation does not mean negation of the positive. Negation of the non-essentials does not mean negation of the essential. Similarly, detachment from material forms does not mean nullifying the positive form. The bhakti cult is meant for realization of the positive form. When the positive form is realized, the negative forms are automatically eliminated. Therefore, with the development of the bhakti cult, with the application of positive service to the positive form, one naturally becomes detached from inferior things and becomes attached to superior things. So this is the basic principle that Srila Prabhupada is giving us. That is, through attachment to Krishna, that one is able to give up detachment to lower things. Once one has attachment to Krishna and begins some experience of Krishna consciousness, gets a little bit of a little taste of that spiritual nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the holy name, through the form of the deity, through one's devotional service, through tasting prasadam, in any way that might be. When that taste of devotional service is there, it is greater than anything else within the material world. So as one gains more and more taste, more and more attraction to Krishna, automatically one becomes detached from matter. So that's the basic principle of devotional service that Srila Prabhupada is telling us here. There's a nice description in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion, of this process of renunciation. And Rupa Goswami puts this very, very nicely in its proper perspective. So I'm going to read some verses from Bhaktivedanta Sindhu. This is starting with 1-2-248. It says, Jnana and Vairagya are suitable for entering bhakti, being somewhat useful in the beginning of bhakti, but they are not considered angas of bhakti. So this is interesting. So what are the angas of bhakti? The angas of bhakti, of course, are the positive processes of sadhana. So in other words, our hearing, chanting, worshipping the deity, living in a sacred place, association with devotees, all of these things are the positive angas of devotional service. Knowledge and vairagya, it says, are useful in the beginning, but they're actually not devotional service itself. because even a non-devotee can exhibit knowledge and detachment. The Mayavadi can be learned in Vedanta Sutra and become very detached, but it's not the same as bhakti. Then it says, because jnana and vairagya generally make the heart hard, the authoritative devotees have concluded that bhakti alone, whose nature is very tender, is the cause of entering into bhakti. So, in other words, there's even a warning against excessive jnana and vairagya. If one concentrates too much on just a process of renunciation, it will make one's heart hard. In other words, one can become very cold, and sometimes we've seen this with devotees. Sometimes if they're trying so hard, so rigidly, you know, to become detached, and particularly if it's what we say beyond our level of realization, in other words, the actual, one may not actually have that adhikari, one may not have that attainment of that position of natural renunciation, but if one is trying in a very, very difficult way, trying to perform austerities, which are actually painful and difficult, then it can make one's heart hard. In other words, one will not have the natural love and compassion that a devotee naturally exhibits. So there's this warning by Rupa Goswami about this process. But now this brings up a problem. And one of the future verses in Jiva Goswami's commentary, he poses this question. Jiva Goswami asks, if vairagya is forbidden, the person practicing bhakti will still be filled with material desires. So how do we get rid of the material desires that we have in the beginning of the process of bhakti if we don't take up some practice of renunciation of those desires? And, of course, to answer this dilemma, Rupa Goswami explains, if a person has a taste for worshiping the Lord, even if he has strong material attractions, those attractions will be for the most part destroyed during sadhana without resorting to vairagya. This is a 1.2.254. So Rupa Goswami is saying very clearly that the process and practice of sadhana bhakti is sufficient to destroy all material things within the heart. All material attachment, all material attractions will be given up by the bhakta just through the performance of one's sadhana bhakti. And then, of course, 1.2.255 is probably the most important verse for devotees in this series, which is the Yukta Vairagya verse. The vairagya of that person who employs objects suitable for devotional development while remaining detached from them is said to be suitable by bhakti. The object should be persistently related to Krishna. So here Rupa Goswami is saying that the solution is that we simply engage everything in Krishna's service through this process of yukta vairagya. In other words, by positive attachment, by positive utilization of all material things in Krishna's service, then those material, so-called material objects become spiritual. The spiritualization process happens when we engage everything in relationship to Krishna. So Prabhupada often gave the example of, you know, putting the, you have the iron rod and you put it in the fire. When you take it out, the iron rod is glowing, it is exhibiting heat and light and all the properties of fire, even though it is actually iron. So in the same way, when we are in the fire of Krishna consciousness, when we are associating with Krishna, the Supreme Pure, then even though all of our, everything that we have to offer, the material objects, ourselves, our bodies, our minds, may be impure, in association with that Supreme Pure, they become purified, and they take on those same spiritual qualities as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although in very small quantity, of course. So this is the spiritualization process, and the process of using everything in this material world in Krishna's service. And then finally, the last verse in the series says, rejection of things related to the Lord by persons desiring liberation who think that these things are simply material objects is called useless vairagya, or palgu. So we have yukta vairagya and palgu vairagya. And so the vairagya that is exhibited often by the impersonalist, who not only they reject everything in the material world, they reject everything in relationship to Krishna. They reject the processes and angas of devotional service. That is described as useless. So we do not want to remain attached to the material objects of this world, and we also do not want to be falsely detached from things that can be used in Krishna's service. So we have a very simple, very practical philosophy that is given to us by our acharyas, by Rupa Goswami, and it was perfectly shown to us by Srila Prabhupada, how we would actually practice this process of Yukta Vairagya within this material world. And he was our best exemplar. He was our acharya who showed us how to use, you know, Prabhupada would always give the example, I'm using this microphone, this dictaphone in Krishna's service, therefore this dictaphone is no longer material. Prabhupada would give these examples all the time to show us how to use everything in Krishna's service and thus become advancing in Krishna consciousness. So the real renunciation is accepting those things favorable for Krishna consciousness, favorable for devotional service. There's one other, a very nice verse that's from the Hari Bhakti Vilas. It's quoted in the Majjhalila Chaitanya Charitamrita. And the basic principle is Anukulyasya Sankalpa Pratikulyasya Varjanam. Accepting those things favorable for Krishna service and rejecting those things unfavorable. The verse is, the six divisions of surrender are the acceptance of those things favorable to devotional service, the rejection of unfavorable things, the conviction that Krishna will always give protection, the acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master, full self-surrender and humility. So these are six principles of surrender, very, very important for us to understand. And the first two are the idea that we accept those things favorable in devotional service and reject those things unfavorable. Of course, sometimes that takes a little intelligence. How do we know if something is favorable or unfavorable? Of course, those things favorable are usually given to us by the acharyas, by the spiritual master. The practice of devotional service is there. Those things that are unfavorable, we understand the four regular principles, any things that make us more attached, that bind us to this material world, are unfavorable. Those things which make us more attached to Krishna are favorable. And as far as the details, we have to rely upon our good common sense, intelligence, the association of devotees, the instructions of the spiritual master, and Krishna as the super soul, the Lord of the heart, to direct us properly on how to accept those things which are going to be favorable for our Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop at that point. I also do want to mention I'm leaving for India tomorrow, so as Mother Mukti is coming back, I am leaving. I'll only be gone for a couple of weeks, and I doubt that I'll become as inspired as she did, as I'm only mainly going for GBC meetings. So sometimes they're extremely important, but they don't always have the same quality of nectar as Parikrama and the Holy Dham. So are there any questions or comments? Thoughts? Yes, I could.
Just appreciating your emphasis on bhakti, and just in the course of my work, I sometimes stay near a yoga center, and they have a beautiful deity of Lord Krishna, so I go there in the morning and evening and chant japa. And just interesting because, you know, the points you were making about how, you know, bhakti is the goal, and we've been very blessed by Srila Prabhupada to have that understanding, and by Rupa Goswami, and as you've been presenting, because it's not always there. You know, they have a beautiful deity of Krishna, and the very nice people and very sattvic. They follow regulative principles, rise early, chant so many mantras. But in different discourses and conversations, over time you come to see that their understanding is that bhakti is a means to ajnana, or like that means to an end, that by worshipping the form of God, eventually one might become one with God and things like that. So We're very, very blessed actually to have this understanding that you were so nicely presenting.
Yeah, it's thank you. It's interesting how we run into that so much. I mean, I remember when I first was a devotee and I would read all these things about impersonalists and mayavadis like this, and, you know, it's hard to understand exactly what this meant. You know, we thought, well, maybe that's somebody off in India, you know, there's some people over there or something, but we realized that this is pervasive everywhere. You know, very, very few people really understand bhakti, you know, and really practice bhakti and understand that the means and the end are the same. For them, it's different. Bhakti is a means to a different end. For us, bhakti is the beginning, bhakti is the middle, and bhakti is the end. Anything else? Ramanya Prabhu?
Thank you. You know, like you were mentioning how Srila Prabhupada in the last days in Vrindavan, Kartik, exactly around this time, He can't even hold the microphone. You know, they were holding the microphone, and dictaphone, the microphone in the book. His disciples and servants, you know, surrounded by so many devotees from all over the world. So but he was still translating. He couldn't even hold the microphone or the book, but he was translating, working for the benefit of the society and the human society too, and the devotees, translating Srimad Bhagavatam, gave us everything. And then in his last lecture in the Vyasasana, it's a very short lecture, before he went inside his room, you know, he said, "I've given you everything. So we have to have a strong faith." Prabhupada said, "I give you everything. You know, just read my books." So we don't need to go outside of ISKCON to search. But it's very meaningful that Prabhupada, how he left a perfect example around Kartik. And he wanted to go and Govardhan Parikram. We know the whole pastime. You know, it's very highly elevated pastimes in Govardhan Hill, rather than Krishna's pastimes in Govardhan Hill. So anyway, this Prabhupada gave us everything. We just need to follow him more, you know, and work and cooperate together, like he said in the last instructions too, work together to maintain his institution, ISKCON.
As I was thinking, as you were talking, that, you know, in the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj, you know, we learned that, you know, the devotee his only distress is the distress of others. And that was example. Srila Prabhupada, you know, he even said, you know, the pain that he would have been experiencing would be excruciating for anyone, for months on end. But yet, Prabhupada barely acted as though he were distressed. But we can see that the stress he felt was again for the conditioned souls. Why else try to continue to translate these books to give the spiritual knowledge to everyone up to the very last breath? Wonderful example. You know, I was thinking, yes, this is as we go up, come up in the next couple of weeks to Govardhan Puja, and Srila Prabhupada's disappearance will be coming soon. It's Kartik's a very wonderful, blissful occasion too, but it is, as you said, a nice opportunity for us to also reflect upon Srila Prabhupada and his disappearance. Madan Mahaprabhu?
A couple of thoughts. One was on how you compared renunciation, artificial renunciation, to real renunciation. So I was also thinking, a lot of times when people say knowledge, they don't. There's a distinction between knowledge and sambandha gyan. Mm. That same idea of not connecting.
Right.
And also, I was remembering Lord Kapiladeva's teachings where he mentions how bhakti dissolves the subtle body. And when you mention you accept those things favorable and reject those things unfavorable, they pointed out that the dissolving process is like digesting. Mm. So he says, so when you accept those things favorable, it actually nourishes your spiritual senses and spiritual body. And you reject those things that are unfavorable, that's the excreting process in your digestion. When you eat something, it separates into nourishment and waste. So how those two work together.
Thank you. I have to remember that digestive metaphor from Madan Mahan.
Well, Vishwanath Chakravarti time for you.
Oh, okay.
It was.
Thanks for giving proper credit. Okay. Terrific round, Prabhu.
Did Srila Prabhupada speak much on the Ramayana? I mean, did he advise us to translate it, to read it, things like that? Because I've never really heard anything, and I've noticed even in the back term it's...
To which? The Ramayana?
Yeah, the Ramayana. I mean, did he say anything?
I don't really know whether Srila Prabhupada specifically talked about that, whether it should be translated. I mean, I know in the Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, we only have a very, very short version, and I'm sure many of us have read, you know, other translations, you know, that are there. I can't answer that, whether Srila Prabhupada specifically talked about the translation of that. Does anybody have any information on that? Velmiki, yeah. Right. Hmm. We have the microphone? Could you hand me the microphone? Wait, I couldn't hear. What were you saying about Valmiki?
No, the Prabhupada mentions in one lecture that we should read a room conversation in India, I think in Hyderabad, that we should read the Valmiki Ramayana. Uh-huh. I recommend it, not Tulsi Ramayana.
Yeah.
And I think the lecture yesterday, they mentioned that that's why, given the synopsis or summarized pastimes of Lord Ramachandra in the Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami.
Does anyone know, have any of our ISKCON devotees translated Valmiki's Ramayana? I don't know if it's been translated or not.
Purna Pragya?
Here's one.
Yeah, our god brother Purna Pragya has one out, and Bhakti Vikas Swami published that book.
Okay.
So that's a really nice Ramayana.
Thank you.
Really nicely done.
Yeah, sometimes these different translations, you have to be all careful about it. I know, like, there's some translations of Mahabharata, for instance, which you wouldn't even know that they're talking about God. You know, I mean, it's, you know, the way that, you know, just the way that it's interpreted sometimes can be very strange. So we do want to, read very good Vaishnava translations of any of these works to get the proper mood and understanding. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.